All right. Welcome, everybody. Good afternoon. I'd like to call to order the September 17th, 2020 regular meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. Can I have a roll call, please?
Mr. Luke? Here. Ms. Savage?
Here.
Ms. Power?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. And now if you'll all stand up and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First up tonight, I would accept a motion to adopt our agenda.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next, we have public participation, and tonight we do have several letters to read. And just as a reminder for anybody watching or listening at a later point, our requirement, we have a link on the district website Board of Education page for you to fill out the form, and the form needs to be received 24 hours before our meeting. So if some people have sent some and they missed that 24-hour time frame, we'll read them next month. So the other reminder just for board members and for anyone else listening is this public participation is really an opportunity for people to share their thoughts, comments, ask questions of the board. It's not meant to be a discussion time with them, but obviously if there's any follow-up required, that will take place. And I think I know what some of these letters are going to be about, and I'm guessing that we will be having some discussion later in the meeting that may address some of the comments. But at the end of the day, if follow-up is required, we'll make sure that happens. So with that, go ahead, Ms. Mangus.
Sure.
Ms. Allen.
So I have, I believe it's five.
Okay.
That I will be reading. And then I have, I believe it's 11 that will postpone until next month.
Okay.
So, the first one is dated August 30th, 2020. It is from Stacy Paul. I do have the address. Do you want me to give it like a normal meeting?
Sure.
1353 Valley Drive, Marysville. The issue of the football picture has caused an extreme amount of pain within my family. My daughter, Sarah, a decorated and well-respected 2018 Marysville graduate, voiced her opinion on Facebook that the photograph was school-sponsored speech and tone-deaf to the pain being experienced in our nation. Her reason was that the thin blue lines does not have the same connotation it did in the past. For some, this flag represents unimaginable pain and suffering. Her comment was in no way disparaging the football players, who are children, or the photographer. Instead, it was a challenge to the adults, such as the coaches and school administrators, for allowing this photograph given our social climate. In no way does our family not support and respect first responders. That was never what this was about. Possibly the team could have chosen the Marysville PD crest or chosen to take their photo in their street clothes without MHS affiliation. We recognize the team members' right to have their own beliefs on their own pages. We challenge the statement that the quarterback club is not affiliated with the school. The football team is a part of the schools. They were wearing Marysville jerseys carrying Marysville flags. The boosters represent Marysville schools. My daughter was publicly eviscerated for her statement by community members. She received threats, homophobic slurs, was told that she was a disgrace to MEVSD, and that our family should leave. She was just today, a week after this happened, which would be several weeks by now, threatened over Facebook Messenger by a man stating he would stand on her neck in the manner of George Floyd's death, or that she could sleep as well as Jacob Blake if she was also shot 7 times. It saddens me to say that we no longer feel welcome or safe in the town that we loved, a town where I raised 3 children who thrived within the school system. This goes to show how divisive the choice of photo was. Intent does not outweigh impact. I hope that the school board will recognize the pain caused to many members of our growing community. Much education needs to happen. I hope that we can all learn from this and challenge ourselves to always consider others. Okay, the second one is dated 9/15. Sharon Strong at 460 Windmill Drive, apartment 30, Marysville. I take care of my three grandsons, and they do well wearing masks. They struggle with online and not being in classrooms. My seventh grade grandson worries so much about having to repeat the grade because if he misses something or can't find it, he's counted absent. I don't feel they are learning as well. I also feel this is setting the kids in general up for failure. They want to be in school and learn. If I could transfer them to school that attends, I would. I love our schools and don't want to leave. They need their teachers, classroom, and friends. 9/15. Again, from Elizabeth Stevens, 691 Lorenzo Drive, Marysville. Our sixth grade twins attend hybrid model and have adjusted well. I attribute their success to the fact that both my husband and I work from home full time. Our employers allow schedule flexibility. Our children do not have additional siblings to take away from their needs. Our children have their own home office and supplies to be successful, and mostly because their teachers are supportive and attentive for our entire family. I cannot imagine how families with fewer resources, multiple children at different ages in the home, parents with non-supportive employers, or the inability to work from home can manage the online or hybrid model successfully. If not for our social privilege, my children will be left home alone, struggling to understand their schoolwork, and emotionally affected by our inability to support their needs throughout the day. I realize many families in our community have a stay-at-home parent or afforded the same flexibility we have in our home, but many families in our community face this challenge every day. Decisions for the entire district are challenging, and the board's objective is not lost on me. I would like additional options that allow families the opportunity to send their child full time without the child requiring special services. Lack of childcare, children who cannot adapt to online learning or virtual learning, children at risk of failing, children with mental health concerns, or children at risk of domestic abuse are all valid reasons for in-person learning. All children deserve the opportunity to learn in a safe environment. Our schools are the only safe environment for many in our community. Governor DeWine recently signed a bill providing immunity to schools. Please remove legality from your decision-making and focus on children and family needs. Our community needs our schools now more than ever. Please consider full-time in-person learning as an option. Thank you. 9/16, Stephanie Boer, 1590 Foxfire Drive. I would like to start by saying thank you to the Board of Education and Marysville Schools for their efforts during such a difficult time. We are now 4 weeks into our hybrid model, and I would like to understand the decision-making behind which instructional model is chosen for our children as we move through the school year. When we started, it had been communicated things could change, and I would like to know what specific and measurable parameters the school board and the Union County Health Department are using to guide their decisions. We are all aware of what is used by the Ohio Department of Health for a public health advisory system. What needs to be met in order for our instructional model to change? With four specific levels offered, what specific targets are used to move our school district to a different level? The optional remote learning winter break is coming up, and I fear the absence of specific targets outlined in your decision-making progress makes it appear as if your decisions could be based partly on speculation. To be clear, I am not arguing for either way. I think you all have been doing a good job considering the circumstances. I am wanting increased transparency of how things are being decided. As our daily lives are heavily impacted by these decisions, we should all fully understand how decisions are being made by our community leaders. I understand the request I have made is difficult, and I know you are trying to do your best in uncertain and challenging times. Outlining specific measurable targets that are used to select our instructional models the same way the state's health department has provided us with 7 specific and measurable indicators should be something you consider. I understand our instructional model is not based on the public advisory system on your past communication. So what is it based on? I am asking targeted questions and vague response statements that you are working within the county health department, making decisions based on the community spread, monitoring COVID-19 impact in our community, or using CDC's current guidelines are not what I'm asking for. If you don't define what it will take for our students to return to the classroom or go full remote, then you leave many parents wondering when things will change and why. Thank you, Stephanie. This one, keep going?
Okay.
916, and this is the last one from Joshua Bacher. I'm sorry if I messed up that last name, Bacher. It's 1931 Creekview Drive, Marysville. And when will the administration and board review the current learning model and decide if we are ready or not to move to instructional model 1?
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, first, we want to thank everybody for reaching out, for sending those letters. And like I said, I know we are going to be talking about a lot of these issues as part of your report, as part of my report. So I think we will move on right now. And as we get to those points, we can have some conversation.
As we were going through this, we had 5 letters that were read today. We have 11 that are postponed.
Right.
In a normal meeting, an individual would be limited to 3 minutes.
Yes.
And we would have a maximum of 30 minutes.
Yes.
And so I would just remind everybody of what our policy is. And I know that time-wise, we're well within the 30 minutes and so forth. I don't know what the next 11 will be and whether that might be something that we need to...
They're all within that 3 minutes.
Yeah, but if we gain additional letters and so forth, we may need to, at least...
If we need to add some more time.
Either add some more time or, do something. But I think we need to be aware of our policy as we...
Yes,
look
definitely.
To our next meeting.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Are the topic of the other 11 letters similar?
I'm sorry?
Is the topic of the other 11 letters, is it similar?
The topic of all 11 are either in support of or asking when we're going to go back to 5 days a week.
Okay.
Yep.
Or in support of the hybrid model that we're in.
Okay. So they all have to deal with our instructional... model, which I know we are, that's a part of Diane's report, and I've got some information too to share on that, and obviously discussion amongst all of us. So, okay, so after that, we will start moving into our reports. Our first report is the High Point report. So, Ms. Savage.
Things are moving along at High Point. Again, they're also at a hybrid model there, a little bit of a rotation between juniors and seniors each day of the week, and then rotating on Fridays. Key challenge for High Point is, of course, all of their courses are vocational based, and so a lot of the lab technician type courses need to be pushed to Friday, so they've been kind of challenged a little bit with that whole activity. One thing that is impacting them, of course, which is probably impacting our own district, is the ability to do internships. They were also strongly proposing internships for all students, and that, based on the whole COVID situation, has been pushed back pretty handily. So continue to work on the construction project. That will be a almost a 2-year project to get that done. And That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Superintendent's report.
Okay, I do have several things. I also have a letter from the union presidents that they sent and would like me to read to all of you.
Okay.
Sorry, my mouth is getting a little dry. So the Marysville Education Association would like to thank our administration for meeting the challenges the start of the school year has brought to parents, students, and staff. From the very beginning, Marysville schools have never wavered in their determination to keep our students and staff safe while attending school. We both had the opportunity to be a part of the Return to School Task Force, which allowed for meaningful conversations to take place on what would be best for students, faculty, and staff under the current guidelines. The hybrid plan has given us a chance to do this. We are able to maintain 6-foot distancing while wearing masks in indoor settings. Studies have shown this significantly lowers the chance of passing the virus, especially when many carriers are asymptomatic. If we continue to do this, it allows students to be in school, lower the risk of positive cases, and avoid returning to full remote learning. We all miss seeing our students every day, and we hope that we can return to every day in the future. Leadership is defined by how someone reacts when they are faced with adversity. Without a doubt, our administration, faculty, and staff have been beacons of light in these times of uncertainty. We hope that our community will continue to support the educational plan and allow new data and updated guidelines to provide a safe avenue for when school reopens fully. That's from Kevin Brandfast and Ryan Gross.
Okay.
So I guess, well, we'll jump around. I do believe you were sent an update, and we have a press release ready to go out that the USDA has extended their food program.
Yes.
And that all students will receive breakfast and lunch at no charge. That started this week. We also have the meal kits set up for people to pick up and et cetera, as we did over the summer. But we're pretty excited to be able to offer that to our students. I also wanted to just congratulate Tommy and the tech team again for $150,000 grant that we received for technology. It will be able to put Wi-Fi on all the buses and access points outside in different locations throughout the district. We're going to purchase additional hotspots, and we'll also be looking at purchasing technology with an internet package. So we're really excited to be able to take advantage of that money that was provided by the state in a grant opportunity. A few updates. As you know, sporting events have started to take place, I think, since the last time we met in an mm-hmm. official fashion. Things are going really well. Mm-hmm. We've hosted a couple home football games, several home volleyball, soccer, so we're very pleased with how things are going. As you know, there's a 15% capacity. Mm-hmm. So one of the pieces, specifically, let's say soccer, wouldn't probably have an attendance of 800 people in Impact Stadium. Mm-hmm. I did ask the question about having students attend and making those available, because I do think that's part of your school experience. Mm-hmm. However, the OCC has passed a rule that you cannot have any type of formal student section. So mm-hmm. We're still looking at options there. I just wanted to make you aware of that. Other than that, we've tried to provide other opportunities for the football game. Even during the away game, we streamed it in on the large screen in the stadium with blankets mm-hmm. and social distancing for kids. So just a new experience for them. Mm-hmm. Performing arts, we've been on hold a couple weeks ago. The new regulations around performing arts were released, so Jonathan has shared those with principals. Principals are working with those staff members in order to set up the protocols for events, choir concerts. The rules, I don't have a copy in front of me, but they are very similar, with the intent of having parents have the priority to watch their kids.
Okay.
Where that becomes a struggle is when you have, 120 member choir.
Right.
And you're trying to figure out how to do that. So they're looking for some ways to balance that and figure that out. So stay tuned for that. The COG passed a resolution, which was also a piece of a TIF that we talked to you about as well. It would allow for grant funding to build a data center at the Innovation Park. And really, there are no commitments. It was just more of someone to apply on behalf of us for that. So we'll keep the money made available through CARES money, from my understanding, Todd, I believe. So stay tuned on that. I'll let you know. Currently, on the academic side, principals are collecting feedback from parents about how school has gone so far. Obviously, we're in week four, and then trying to make some changes to adjust to that feedback. Most of the feedback has been positive, with concerns around the remote days. So ways in which they can have some more contact with teachers during the day. So they are looking at those. I also wanted to provide some pretty specific feedback. As you know, for our K-4 virtual, K-6 virtual school, we did elect to go with Virtual Florida Academy and our virtual school, that one is. K-1, we are experiencing some difficulties. It's a pretty heavy lift on the reading side for our students, and very difficult for them to do independent of a parent. So over the past few weeks, Steve and the teachers have been supplementing that content, and we are receiving good feedback on changes thus far. So supplementing with things like iReady or Lexi or whatever, and trying to personalize more that K-1 experience instead of the pre-determined virtual platform. So that's where we are. So that's continuing to evolve for us. I guess, and then leading into our 4 weeks, all in all, I would say things are going really, really well, considering all of the changes that are in place for this year. I've been very pleased when I've been in the buildings with, I know there were concerns with students wearing masks and et cetera, and really, honestly, it's gone really well. Students have been great, staff, parents have made great adjustments, so very pleased with that. The distancing has worked out as well with the smaller numbers on the hybrid rotation. With that being said, right before we came into session, there were two press releases, one from the Columbus Dispatch, is my understanding, and then I believe Channel 4 posted also that on the state dashboard, Marysville was leading the state with the number of students who had tested positive with COVID. I don't know that to be true or false at this point. Compared to other districts, we have had 11 students either test positive or are now considered recovered from COVID, but I do not know for a fact how that compares, and that everyone's reporting in the same way. It's a brand new tool, and I would just ask everyone to keep that in mind. With that being said, don't forget, if you go to the district website, there is a coronavirus reporting tool, and we keep that dashboard up to date. Currently, we have had, or have, 11 students that have tested positive or recovered, 5 staff members that have tested positive or recovered, 12 students that have been quarantined. So they could be in quarantine now, or they could be out of quarantine, but so far since the beginning of the year. And then also 17 members of our staff have been quarantined. So the quarantine numbers are not required on the dashboard, but it is something we obviously keep track of. So that would be our current numbers. What I did want to show you, and it kind of fits in nicely to
Can I ask you a quick question before you? So of those students and staff members, do you know with the contact tracing what the source of the virus was?
I mean, perfect. Yes, I was going to talk about that as well, but that's okay.
Yeah.
None of the cases that have been positive have been a result of a school event.
Okay.
It's been mostly family events, things that are happening outside of the school day,
right.
Sleepovers. I think we had several that fell into a positive in quarantine because of a sleepover at someone's house.
Okay.
But to date, which is good, we have not had any directly related to something happening within the school day.
Okay.
Which really kind of brings us to this part and really talking about, the idea of quarantining and positive tests and what goes into that. And without going too far down the rabbit hole, there are two major factors that I'd like to talk with you about. Number one is distance. Number two is time. Those are the big things, or the only two things, really, the health department strongly considers in making the determination for a student that might be quarantined or not. So this might look like one of our classrooms now. So here you have the teacher. Here you have your students. Let's say one student tests positive. In our current situation, we're able to maintain this 6 foot of distance. And this is not to scale or anything. I just wanted to give everyone a visual.
Mm-hmm.
That student is the only one that could not return to school and would have to fulfill whatever the requirements are from the health department.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some factors. Let's say that the teacher held a small group and they were within 6 feet of each other for over 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Then that changes the trajectory. But in this kind of setup, where the teacher primarily would have the role in the front of the classroom and establish that 6 feet of distance throughout, the only student that would be required to stay at home because they were a positive test would be the student in red. So I tried to look at, to give you a perspective of what happens if we have 28 students in that classroom. Again, not to scale, just more the visual. If we had more of a traditional classroom, teachers in front, not walking up and down the rows, keep that in mind, that everyone surrounding the student then would be quarantined. So if you think about a high school model where that student, since they're blocking their schedule, they would have four different periods which this would apply. So eight students times four would bring you up to 32 students would be quarantined, not including lunchtime and different
bus,
parameters.
Yeah.
I'm just talking basic class. This is also making the assumption that the teacher isn't moving up and down the aisles and checking on student work, and we know that's not true. Or any other kind of interaction that might happen between maybe this student and that student. But I just tried to give you a basic scale of what we would, there's always, right, it's a relational business, so there's always other kind of things to keep in mind, but I thought this would give you an idea. So in the hybrid, let's say a teacher got sick, and we've had this happen this school year, that a teacher has tested positive, but because of the activities happening in that class that day, and the distance that was she was able to maintain, no students had to quarantine as a result of that. So again, a lot of factors in that, but that kind of gives you an idea. And in this case, if we had all 28 students in the classroom, it would most likely impact that first two rows of students. Again, saying that the teacher never did a small group, walked up and down the aisles, anything. So you can imagine if a teacher had four blocks during the day, it would impact eight students in each one of those blocks. So, to date, the 6 feet of social distancing and the masks have really provided the opportunity for us to be able to keep as many kids in school as possible in the hybrid. Mm-hmm. And I just thought maybe giving you a little visual to go along with that would help frame things up. So as we continue down the road, we are looking at our case counts. Mm-hmm. We're looking at the case counts in the county. Mm-hmm. We're actually also looking at case counts by township in the county. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the northern part of Union County as opposed to the townships that would impact Marysville. Mm-hmm. We are continuing to meet with the health department weekly. Mm-hmm. And talk through each one of these situations. It is a very large undertaking to do the contact tracing with the health department. They're great to work with, but it is extensive. The other thing I would tell you, we've been pretty fortunate, is hopefully I can explain this situation. In the student cases, more than once, we've had a B student test. So they haven't been in school for the past 3 days, so there's no possible contact for the other students. So that's worked out really well for us. Could it be the luck of the draw? I'm not really sure, but mm-hmm. in more than one case, that has happened. So I can't say enough about the work everyone's doing in order to make sure that we're all safe. Mm-hmm. So the one piece that we've talked a lot about is that break from Thanksgiving to January. Mm-hmm. We're preparing a video that will go out the beginning of next week to talk about that. We would anticipate that we would make a decision if we would continue in that what's kind of the pre-described as remote platform towards the end of October based on our current situation. So I think that was brought up in one of the letters. And, you know, we kind of said from the get-go, we did not want to be in a situation where we were jumping in and out of instructional models, that mm-hmm. we wanted students to be in a model, a minimum of about 9 weeks. So it is week 4, so we're continuing to look at all this information. We do recognize that some other school districts are going 5 days a week that surround us. Mm-hmm. I think some things that we need to be cognizant of as school district, we have several more students mm-hmm. than some of those other school districts as well. So our burden is a little heavier with that. So we'll keep all of those pieces in mind as we move forward.
Okay.
So we'll continue to update parents and as well.
Well, and I know... I mean, first off, I think just kind of like my reaction as a parent is obviously, and I think we're probably all on the same page here, is that I do sympathize with the challenges of this hybrid model. I mean, I don't think anybody thinks it's an easy situation, you know, but I appreciate mm-hmm. seeing these visuals here. And also, I mean, I was planning to say something in my report, but I think it kind of follows up with what you've talked about here, because I was at a chamber meeting this morning and sat next to Jason Orsina, who's our county health director, and so of course they asked him to, you know, see if he would want to make a few statements and stuff, and he started out, he just said that the data, and this is pretty much from Jason, the data the health department is seeing strongly suggests that the safety protocols in schools have been effective in slowing or preventing transmission within schools. Jason said the majority of spread in our county is coming from social activity. One chamber board member asked when or if Jason would recommend going back 5 days a week, and Jason said every district is unique. Conversations have to take into account each school's community to make that decision. Said it's likely that larger suburban districts will remain in hybrid or remote longer than smaller districts, which can sometimes make changes more easily than larger districts. In most buildings, going back 5 days could eliminate the ability to social distance, resulting in exponentially more students quarantined after positive test results. Jason also updated the Chamber Board that his department is required to have a mass vaccination plan in place by early November, but even if vaccinations start before the end of the year, we would need to continue with most, if not all, our safety protocols until possibly next summer. So, I mean, I think it's, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's this is not a short-term situation right now. So I thought the timing was pretty good. Thank you, Jason, for, you know, for sharing those comments. But again, there are challenges, and so I guess I kind of wonder, I know we have some resources on our website, but as far as extra daycare options, things like that, because I think that, to me, it seems like the biggest issue is that daycare and help on the remote days.
Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit brainstorming some options for families. So we're mm-hmm. looking at the possibility of families being able to reach out to, for instance, a National Honor Society student or a mm-hmm. LEO student mm-hmm. in order to maybe work with students of parents that have to work. So mm-hmm. maybe they're all A kids and could work together on B days.
Right.
So we just opened up those ideas.
Right.
I know Kristen Jones was reaching out and trying to look at some things like that. So that mm-hmm. that just started this week. Mm-hmm. We do have the child care hub. I mm-hmm. always try to say we do not vet the people who post.
Right.
So that would still be the responsibility of the parent.
Right.
We still have openings in our own SAC program. If people are interested in those options, they just need to reach mm-hmm. out mm-hmm. To the SAC provider, because we still do have those full day options available.
Mm-hmm.
There are some resources available. We know mm-hmm. there might be some potential partnerships maybe with community businesses.
Right.
So, we'll do our best to help people link together who need it.
Right.
If they just continue to reach out to their principals specifically, and then we'll look for those connections
right.
if possible.
That was really awesome, because that even helped me to understand more mm-hmm. on this model that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a reminder. It's always going to come down to the instruction that's happening in the classroom, too. But I thought maybe if I could mm-hmm. just give some general graphics that would let you see the space that we're able to obtain that way.
Yeah.
Well, we talked early on. And I think we acknowledge the best educational situation was for the kids to be in the classroom with the teacher.
Right.
Yep.
But the county health department recommendations, the guidelines, the admonitions we've gotten from legal counsel and our insurance and everybody has been, make sure you social distance and you wear masks and do things in an appropriate way. One of our letters mentioned the liability mm-hmm. bill that was just signed, and mm-hmm. I think I included that in my report. And it does grant coverage against civil suits, mm-hmm. except when there has been gross neglect in terms of your policies or your decisions or so forth. And I would expect, I'm not a lawyer, but I would expect that someone that would sue our school district or any school district would come in and say, if you weren't following health department guidelines, if you weren't doing what the State Department of Health said, and so forth, you were acting in a neglectful way. Mm-hmm. And so I know trying to maintain the social distance significantly limits the number of people
right.
that can be in the classroom. So as frustrating as it is, you know, they're just as the parents are facing real challenges in trying to meet the constraints and, and problems that this COVID virus has faced, our school district is facing many, in some ways, the same type of problem. You know, what do we do with it, with our kids all day? How do we take care of them, and how do we provide them? I had a conversation with my son, and he said, "Dad," he said, "how do people survive?" And he says, "I've got you and Mom." Mm-hmm. You know, but not everybody has their parents living in town.
Right.
You know, to provide you some support. And I said to him very honestly, I said, "I have absolutely no idea how people are putting things together." But I think it goes back to what I've said several times. We have a plan to get the kids educated in our community. But we can't do it without community support. And child care issue, we can do some things, but our community needs to be creative, they need to be innovative, they need to recognize that this is a problem, and either individuals or groups and organizations do what they can to try to support those families that desperately need support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know even, like, there were some comments about, you know, other schools. Well, we know Jonathan Alder's going 5 days and stuff, but I thought it was interesting. I have a connection to Columbus Grove School District, and they started out 5 days a week. And just this week, they are switching their 7th to 12th grade to a hybrid model because they experienced exactly what you showed up there on the screen. They had one middle school student test positive, and 20 students were quarantined. And that's a small school district. So, you know, because of the lack of social distancing, they saw that impact, and so they made the decision. They said, we can't do 5 days a week for our high school students who are moving around into different classrooms. So, you know, I mean, I think everybody's trying to do the best they can do. And, you know, we've always said safety is number one. And I think about issues with staff as well. You know, I mean, what happens if we start having more staff members that test positive? How do we cover the classrooms? We don't want our students with substitute teachers for a long time. We don't want them going back and forth from a regular teacher to a substitute. So, you know, I think you try and do use the process that seems to be working right now as far as the entire district, you know, acknowledging that, like you say, it's definitely putting a lot of strain on our families. And
we've had we're in week four. Today is 17 days of class for our students. And to me, that's just not a long enough period of time to determine whether or not the policies and procedures that you have are achieving the goals that you would like to achieve. I know one individual mentioned in an email that I got that we were at level one. You know, why aren't you back in school? Well, this week we're level two.
Right.
You know, and next week we could be level three or level one. And if people think things are confusing now, weekly changes, that was what was driving our decisions, weekly changes would be just incredibly difficult to make. And so as we move forward, looking toward the remainder of the school year, I think it's important, from my perspective, to take some time and recognize that whatever decisions we make on the instructional model have to stay in place for a while. We have to be able to, you know, get a feel for where we are, what we can do, what's working and what's not working. And if we choose to make a change at some point, weeks or months from now, whatever it happens to be, that change I would expect to say, you know, it's going to be what we're looking at for several months following that. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to make a good decision, try to make the best decision we can, and make sure that we're not creating more problems than we're trying to solve. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I wanted to either ask some questions or make some comments if this is a...
Sure.
So one of the reasons we may be at level one in a given week or month is because we're in a hybrid model rather than 5 days a week. So that has to be taken into account as well. I think one of either you or one of the letter writers mentioned that just because it looks like the numbers are better this week doesn't mean we jump back to putting big groups of people together again, whether it's in the classroom or at sporting events or extracurriculars, because the two things are linked. And if we start getting big groups together, as soon as the numbers go down a little bit, the numbers might go right back up. Mm-hmm. So we always have to remember that. Secondly, I heard a number of parents, not just in the letters, but in the community, wanting some sort of a system that will tell the community mm-hmm. when we're moving to another level of instruction. Mm-hmm. Sort of like if you go on the county website, you can see they've got 7 measures, mm-hmm. and this is when they go to orange or yellow or red, right? Mm-hmm. So my question is, if we did something like that, if we came up with those criteria and published them, would it actually help anybody make plans in the next week or month or 6 months? Because you see my point, if we lay these metrics out, won't we still not know when we're going to switch? Because we don't know what the numbers are going to be. Or am I missing something?
No, I think you've said it correctly.
So it's actually really difficult to lay out some criteria of when we switch models that are going to help parents plan. Is that right? Or is there a way?
Well, I mean, beyond monitoring our case counts in the larger county and looking at this, some of those same indicators that are making the county marks, I mean, that I think we said from the first meeting, the 6-foot issue, there's no way to bring anyone, said that wrong, no way to bring everyone back at 6 feet distance. There's just not a possibility. So it would have to be the decision to forego 6 feet of distance in our classrooms is really the decision that would have to be made.
When you say there's no way, you mean physically?
Correct. The physical space does not allow for 6 feet of distance for all 5,100 plus students to come back.
And so even if you take into account the 20% that chose virtual.
Correct.
Even with that 80%, it's not, we just don't have the space in the classrooms.
Correct.
Yeah. Because right now with the hybrid, it's 50% of 80% each day,
correct.
Right? So it's like 40% is in a classroom mm-hmm. at a time. And that's, some classrooms are still pretty tight with that. Depending on,
yeah,
you know, I mean, some might have 10, some might have 14, but
right.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Some people were willing to switch to help balance that out, so.
Right.
I believe I have written down somewhere here, on an AJ, we have 2,113 students.
Okay.
B days, we have 1,862, and C students make up 83 students of those numbers.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So. Okay. And I still go back to the whole issue of staff. I think is maybe one of the most complex parts of this whole thing. You know, trying to balance everything out. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So what I'm hearing from parents in the letters and elsewhere are three main things. One, difficulties with online learning. Two, when do the kids get to go back to school 5 days a week? And three, can we have some sort of metric so that we know when this mm-hmm. is going to happen? So I've already talked about the metric.
Mm-hmm.
For the online learning, I wanted to ask you, how much are we able to do as a district, administrators and or teachers, to continually improve the online experience. How is that part?
So that's kind of a multi-tiered piece. We're doing ongoing PD currently, and it depends on the building, as always. A unified classroom is new to some buildings this year. So teachers are becoming better and better skilled at unified classroom, which is, remember last year parents said, I want to go one place to get my information. So unified classroom is our learning management system. That's the one place where they're going to go. There may be links to things outside, but that platform is what houses teacher assignments and work. Buildings are starting to experiment, and I would tell you Creekview staff is starting to experiment with Zooming live lessons on the off days. So if you're, it's A day and you're B kid, some teachers are working on Zooming. So our teachers are really working hard and growing, I think, on their digital knowledge, quite frankly. So that's been a plus. And that's part of the feedback that when I talked about principals are asking for feedback, that's some of the stuff they're asking. So some of the things I read in a couple of buildings were really around, we'd really like additional adult touch points on our off days. So I'm an A kid. Is there an adult that can touch base with my kids on the B day?
Right.
So principals are working on that in their building. So can we do better? Always. And we're going to continue to strive. But we are giving lots of PD, working with teachers, trying to get that side as good as it can be.
Do you have a planned schedule for asking for feedback too? Because I know we kind of waited a couple weeks and then said, okay, now you've had a chance to get a little familiar with this. What's your feedback now? And so,
they're asking on an ongoing basis.
Okay,
so,
right.
Some of them had specific things they wanted to ask first that maybe was specific to something new they were doing.
Right.
So what we thought was at the end of the 9 weeks, the district would do a larger feedback piece, but let the buildings do those formative pieces along the way so they could make changes.
Okay.
And the district will do more of a summative piece at the 9 week mark.
Okay.
Did that help, Brian?
Yes, thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay. Good. Is that it?
If you wanted to be done, go. The enrollment, I just wanted to hit on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Last year, this time, enrollment was 5,264 students. This year, our enrollment is 5,120 students. Again, that's not unusual for us to ebb and flow for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if I can give you a couple highlights. Virtual school, or virtual academy, is sitting at 990 students. Our homeschool students, we have 365 this year, which is up 160, but several of those were new enrollees who were already homeschool students in another district.
Okay.
So we're trying to kind of weed through that and understand that we didn't have parents say that they were not comfortable sending their students at all and they would homeschool them.
Mm-hmm.
409 of those virtual academy students are K-4.
Wow.
So not quite half, but that's significant as well.
Yeah.
Well, I think that makes sense too, that parents would be very concerned about the younger child, and where an older child may be able to have a better understanding of circumstances.
So. Yeah, I think the last thing I have also speaks to one of the letters that I read this evening. I think it was last week.
Yes.
And Sue and I had the opportunity to be part of a larger forum of community leaders discussing inclusion and diversity for Marysville. Mm-hmm. And really it was an opening conversation with a variety of business owners, city leaders, county leaders, to really just start a larger conversation about some of the things we've talked about and how we can be cognizant and vigilant in our pursuit to have respectful conversations when we have differences, and how do we honor differences in our community, and how can our community be more welcoming, I think was a word that
yes.
was used more than once for mm-hmm. people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And
really any kind of diversity, you know?
Right.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Nan, Sue, do you have anything you would add to that?
I mean,
kind of a summary.
Yeah. My only comment, just kind of going back to that letter, too, is I think, you know, it's important that we have some conversations, that we start to try and bring some awareness in our community, because I mean, some of the responses that we've seen on social media they're just not acceptable, you know. Everybody can have their own opinion, but when people start being threatening and rude, it just doesn't do anything for our community. It really pulls us down. And so I just appreciated the fact that Chris Schmank, you know, brought some people together to start having these conversations. And I know there's a focus on, you know, bringing some small groups together. And I sent you some information from Toledo School District. They're kind of in a second year of a student-led group. And they're talking about a variety of different things. And what I thought was kind of interesting, it was like a focused on diversity, racial issues and stuff. But one of the topics that this group came up with was how their different buildings were handling testing exemptions. You know, just like in regular conversation, it was something that bothered them. So just this whole idea of having respectful conversation, talking to people, having relationships, getting to know them, and really understanding what are some of your issues, or what's bothering you, why would you say something like this, or, you know, whatever. I just think that I think it's an important thing that we need to be starting here in Marysville, and I look forward to seeing some more things happening, because, you know, we had our statement, our board statement, and we intentionally didn't want to condemn or condone anything, because it's really our job to promote these conversations, to promote education, and help our students learn how to have respectful conversations. So
I really felt like that conversation was about building a community of respect. That
yes.
That's a much better way to say it.
Yeah, yep.
And I think all of us would agree with that.
Well,
yep.
And I know just from media reports and so forth, our school district is not alone. All across the state of Ohio, school districts are having conversations, beginning to look at what their policies and procedures are, and hopefully, you know, all of the schools, including ours, will develop a more inclusive, more welcoming environment where people are respected. I used to tell the kids in class that my classroom rules were real simple. I only had one: be respectful of everyone. Mm-hmm. Because if you are respectful, that covers virtually every sort of activity or comment or whatever that you do, if you respect other people. It's fundamental to civilization.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's it.
Okay. Todd, Treasurer's Report.
Just had a few things to highlight. One, I was asked a question about athletics, and, you know, obviously we're moving forward with athletics, but we're not having a lot of the ticket revenue that we typically would. So just the question is, well, how does that work?
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, the way it works is the athletic department opened the year with a significant healthy reserve balance. So the high school started the year with a balance of $88,000 in their athletic account. The middle school had a balance of $68,000 in their athletic account. So they definitely have the funding available to operate this year, but that's something that we'll keep an eye on as the year progresses. As you know, obviously that balance is probably going to decrease because football revenue is a big piece of their funding. So that's something we'll keep an eye on throughout the year as the year progresses. And obviously we'll see in future sports, are we able to get back to a more full revenue, you know, full fan base or not. Just a couple updates on our revenue, our I guess cash flow projections. We received our casino tax revenue at the end of August. It was half, 50% compared to last year at this time. So we went down from $146,000 to only $73,000 this year. That is, so far, pretty much in line with what we had projected in our projections. We had assumed a 40% decrease for the fiscal year, which is actually probably a good thing because, you know, we're talking, we get that twice a year. It's a 50% reduction in August. What we've seen is that casino revenues have really rebounded. So I think there's a good chance that it's not going to be a 50% cut when we get our next disbursement. I think it'll probably be a little closer to normal, not quite normal, but, you know, back up. So, you know, while it is a decrease in revenue, it's good for our projections that I think for the year will probably be a little higher than projections. We received our public utility personal property tax. That hit in September, so you won't see that on the August financials. You may remember last year when we were talking in the May five-year forecast that our PUP tax revenues were down about $253,000, and we were trying to, you know, determine what was the cause of that decrease. So with our September final settlement, we were actually up $300,000 compared to the prior year. So it was just delinquent payments that were caught up, so we're back on track, so that was good news. And finally, we received our TIF revenue, also in, I think that was also beginning of September, and we received that. Good news there, we're up $300,000 compared to this time last year. So that's very good news. Biggest increases in valuation there were at Coleman's Crossing and City Gate. So that led to the increase, most significantly led to the increase in our revenue.
Okay.
Todd, yesterday at a town hall, virtual town hall meeting that Sue and I were part of, they mentioned at some point in there that these big pipelines that were being laid across the state of Ohio were contesting their valuations. And, you know, at the time I didn't think too much of it because we haven't had one of those pipelines run through here. But is there an impact on our school district for some of those big projects? You know, there's one up in northern Ohio, down in southeastern Ohio, and thinking a little bit toward the one that was announced where they're going to build a pipeline up.
Natural gas.
From Dublin. So,
I mean, any of our valuations could always be contested. I wouldn't say, you know, what you're probably hearing about is a result of the fracking. So I don't think it's something, you know, of that particular conversation that's likely to impact us. But at the same time, there's always that potential. You know, the biggest increase we recently received was based on an electric generation plant, transmission plant. So, I mean, that value could be contested. So, I mean, there's always the possibility that values could be contested. But that specific reason you're looking at, I don't think that would impact us.
Yeah, okay. All right. I didn't think so, but I thought I would ask.
That's it.
Okay. For my report, I sent out my student achievement report to you all, and I've just decided, you know, Kim Miller-Smith is the OSBA senior consultant on student achievement, and so every month she sends things out to me. And this last month, I thought it was just kind of a nice reminder for boards, you know, when we go through situations like this and, you know, our administration and staff are working so hard, I just thought it was kind of important to remind the board what some of our roles are and ways that we can help lead our district. And so, you know, she had a list of six areas to focus on as a board. And I thought, well, I think every month I'm just going to focus on a different area and have a chance to just have a, you know, maybe a brief discussion. It might result in us doing something in a work session or some other thoughts and stuff. So anyways, the first area that she focused on as key leadership traits for a board is to start with our vision, the vision of our district. And so there was a vision self-assessment form that they got permission to use from the National School Boards Association. And so anyways, I just thought it might be kind of interesting to look at this and to have some discussion. How do we feel we're doing in this area? And I know, you know, if you go to our district's website, we have our mission: innovate, collaborate, inspire. We have a list of value statements. I don't think we have a specific vision, and you know, and which is okay, you know. But I thought I just did a little bit of research. I know there's frequently people talk about what's the difference between mission and vision, and mission is kind of the action. What are you doing? So we're innovating, collaborating, inspiring, and I feel like that's a pretty well-known mission of our district, you know. But anyways, I think Mr. Smith filled out his form there. Yeah. I know I filled out mine. And it looks like you've got everything on the left column there, fully achieved.
No.
No? Okay.
No,
okay,
have,
good.
I have one that's way over on the right.
Okay. Which one is that one?
Well, that was our vision is clearly articulated and known to all community members who have vested interest.
Yes.
And I don't know what other people think.
Yes.
And what they know. I know we have tried to articulate it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, we've said it, we've, you know, repeated it, we've posted it, we've done a lot of things with it. Mm-hmm. But whether or not other people have actually heard it,
mm-hmm.
and whether they recognize how important that is to our district,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Okay.
So
I did have a question mark on that one myself.
Yeah.
But
so I put that over in the don't know section.
Okay. I think one other area I had on the very top when it talks about stakeholder representatives helped create the vision, and I think this mission statement came out of the strategic plan, and there were people, the only one I didn't know for sure whether there were any students on the strategic plan committee.
Yeah.
Okay.
We had a focus group we took it to. They
yes.
were on the internal.
Yeah.
That
okay.
we had a student focus group we worked with.
Okay. Good. So.
Yeah. I said I thought we had done a pretty good job. As I looked at the list, there were some that I wasn't sure of.
Yes.
But I didn't, as I looked at that, I didn't feel like all of those necessarily needed to be there. But, you know, like here's a list of all the people that could be involved in this.
Right.
But, you know, I felt like we really had a very representative sample of our community. I know the work that Diane did early on was to mm-hmm. gather information from the community and to talk with people and try to build from that. So,
right. Well, and it talks in here about we frequently revisit and reaffirm our vision to ensure our constancy of purpose. And so, again, sometimes it's just, to me, it's just that reminder to let people know that we do have a clear mission here, and you know, all of our financial decisions are based on whether or not they align to our strategic plan, which is overseen by this mission. So, anyways, that was just kind of, that was my goal with that. So,
well, let me
sure.
say one thing.
Okay.
I thought the last 3 points were
mm-hmm.
maybe our strong suit.
I agree.
The foundation, you know, that the vision is the foundation of long-range and strategic planning and the policy decisions. And
mm-hmm.
I think we go to that, our mission statement, which I kind of substituted for vision.
Yes.
The vision is a guiding force that sets the framework of how we operate as a local district and a supervisory union.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we base our resources and budget decisions based on our decisions, or based on our vision. And I think we do a good job of that. I know I mentioned to Diane early on that I had, as many of us have, had an opportunity to work on vision statements or mission statements or whatever, and oftentimes they're laughable. Mm-hmm. You write something down on a piece of paper, you put it in a folder, it goes in a file someplace.
Check it off.
Yeah, you know, we check that box, and mm-hmm. there's not a single person in the organization that can tell you what their mission statement says after about 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but our mission statement, I think you can go into any building
mm-hmm.
and walk down the hall, pick somebody out, even kids, and ask them, what's the mission statement for our school district? And they will give you a pretty good rendition
mm-hmm.
of our mission. And I really applaud the work that went into that years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really set the base from which we were able to build.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, which next thing on here is just recent OSBA training. Dick and I attended a webinar about collaboration counts that was talking about partnerships with local governments, really with a focus on development. But there were some great examples of partnerships, things like libraries and school buildings, telemedicine connections in the buildings. But it also talked about development and the importance of being at the table early on in order to weigh in during the process versus after the plan is complete. So I know a couple times we've had some resolutions to approve TIFs, and I know it's been a lot easier for a board to weigh in on those when we've had some information kind of as things were starting versus finding out at the last minute. So I know you're on the housing, like that development committee. One of their recommendations was that you have some people from the school district, either board members or people from the treasurer's office, as part of a committee that regularly meets when they're just on development topics, you know, and just the way Marysville and Union County is growing. I didn't know if there's any other kind of a committee that...
I wouldn't say mine's a regular COVID kind of sidetracked a little bit. So not that I'm aware of. Like
okay.
That.
Okay. Well, maybe I can ask Eric at a chamber meeting or something. Because I know Todd would love to be on a committee mm-hmm. like that, right?
I love committees.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, also wondered, remember you got the email from Marcy about the Ohio ethics law training. Wondered if... You've completed yours? Okay.
I have not yet.
Okay, so I'll just...
I have my certificate.
You have your certificate. Okay, okay, good. So I'll just tell her to send out a reminder to anybody who hasn't completed it. And then next Wednesday, September 23rd, is the OSBA Central Region Fall Conference. It's going to be a free virtual event from 6 to 8 p.m. So if you haven't signed up, you can either, and you're interested in attending, either let Todd know or you can sign up yourself through the OSBA website. And then just that reminder, later on tonight, we're going to be voting for our delegate and alternate to the OSBA Capital Conference business meeting. I think most of us have done that before, but this year, because it's a virtual event, the business meeting timing is not during the Capital Conference. There's a briefing before and the meeting. Both of those are before the Capital Conference, so hopefully you had a chance to check your calendar. And then finally, I'm not sure if this 2017 Marysville High School graduate is watching tonight or not, but Madison, and I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Herzig or something, had contacted me. She's a senior at Capital University, and she had a class assignment to watch or be a part of a meeting. So I gave her the link if she's watching. Hi, Madison. And that's it for my report. So let's see, do we have a legislative report?
Hopefully all of you received my written report. A couple of things. We mentioned earlier House Bill 606, which is the immunity at the state level for civil lawsuits. Reading through that, it protects against death or loss unless the exposure or transmission was caused by reckless conduct or intentional misconduct on the part of the person whom the lawsuit is brought against. And so just, you know, the fact that the governor did it didn't throw the doors open for our school district or any school district or any business to now say, we don't have to follow any rules, we don't have to do anything.
So does that apply to public entities like a school district as well as private businesses?
Yes. Now, it was set up for employers, but the bill extends protections to healthcare providers and facilities,
okay,
emergency services, schools, nonprofit and for-profit entities,
okay,
government entities, churches, colleges, and universities. So,
and when is that effective? Now
it's effective retroactive,
okay,
to March the,
okay,
29th, I,
gotcha,
think, is, I didn't put that in the report.
Okay.
But it's retroactive back, so it covers anything that might have occurred this past spring. And this particular bill was one that OSBA, as well as the superintendent's organization, teacher organization,
mm-hmm,
everybody was very much in favor of this, and many of the top executives and leaders of those groups and organizations got to participate in the signing ceremony and so forth. So that's a pretty good deal
mm-hmm,
all the way around. A couple of things of interest. Representative Cupp was selected as the Speaker of the House, and so the Cupp-Patterson funding bill is now back in the mix. And I talked with Will Schwartz from OSBA just prior to this meeting, and he expects a substitute bill to be introduced because there were some pieces of the original bill that were obviously not workable, and so a substitute or amendments were expected, but that bill is going to try to come up with a way to kind of equalize the funding. I think Todd in the past has said it probably is pretty neutral in its impact on our school district. House Bill 436, dealing with dyslexia screening and literacy standards. Our district has had a very strong voice in this particular area of legislation, and it's nice to see that that's getting some hearings and gets to move forward. Senate Bill 358 is an important bill, as it would extend all the flexibility that was provided last spring through this school year in terms of all sorts of school activities and evaluations. The other day, the school report cards were released without grades.
I like your comment.
Yeah, I looked at it, and I gave us an A-plus in all areas.
All right, there you go.
So if anybody asks... And then at the town hall meeting, there were a couple of things that were brought up that had not been aware of. We've talked about the property transfer provision, where an individual could file a petition and get their property transferred to another school district. Well, there was a lawsuit, Plain Local School District Board of Education et al. Versus Mike DeWine et al. And the judge, the federal judge for the Southern District, found that the provision in House Bill 166, the state budget bill, was unconstitutional. And it was unconstitutional because it affected every school district in the state, was a very complicated, very significant change, and it should have been dealt with in a separate piece of legislation. It violates the one single issue or the one something or another provision that is in law. And I provided a statement from the law firm that represented the Plain Local School District. So it gives some background. There's a nice comment from the superintendent, says, you know, this was not just an issue that would impact us, it would impact every single school district and create chaos. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you had people that were trying to move from a more diverse community in and less affluent community to a less diverse community and more affluent community. The judge seemed to have a significant issue with that and said it violated all sorts of provisions of state law. I sent a couple of weeks ago a message to Representative Richardson and Burke. The part that is highlighted in red is the part that went to both of them, and it was talking about the Senate bill that is being discussed. I'll let you read that. The other good news is that I got contacted from the National School Board Association and sent messages to both Senators Brown and Portman about how money from the CARES Act was to be divided among the states. And there was an initial letter of guidance that was sent from Betsy DeVos that said that money should be divided on a per capita basis to all of the schools, which would result in more money going to private schools and less money to the public schools. Traditionally, when federal money is distributed, it's been done under a Title I formula, and under that Title I formula, more money would flow to the public schools, less money to the private schools. And a federal court ruled that the guidance was improper, and so the bulleted item there is from the Department of Education website. The Congress set this aside. The department will award these grants to state educational agencies for the purpose of providing local educational agencies, including charter schools, so forth, the relief. And that will be done according to the formula of Title I funds. So a significant decision for our school district and for every school district.
And that, just for one particular grant, saved the district about $4,500.
Wow.
Yeah, so anyway, that is my legislative report.
All right.
Bit lengthy tonight.
Well, thank you. They've been busier recently, haven't they?
They have been, yeah. And there were a couple of things that were really good news.
Yeah, yep. Great, thank you. All right, Safety and Drug Committee report. Ms. Powers?
I had a conversation with Nancy Beals. Nothing for tonight. They're hoping to get the student survey data shortly, so we will be sharing those results at a future meeting coming up. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to kind of put in the word on the drug situation. We're seeing more and more situations where marijuana is being laced with substances such as fentanyl. We have a lot of people that are coming in saying, I only smoked weed, positive for THC, but then also testing for fentanyl. Very dangerous drug. So I just kind of wanted that to be on the radar, that now not only are they doing that, but overdoses can happen very quickly with fentanyl and death. Mm-hmm. Methamphetamines have also been on the rise for quite some time now. and with your amphetamines and stuff. So we're seeing a lot of abuse of amphetamines, you know, which is such your Adderall, things like that. So just wanted to bring it up to the board's attention that, you know, since we've gotten kind of a, you know, with using Suboxone and Vivitrol and stuff for the opiate situation, our other drugs are now on the uprise. So, and that's all.
All right. Thank you. Next, I would accept a motion to approve a variety of minutes here. Minutes from our August 20th regular meeting, our August 31st special meeting, and our September 1st special meeting.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Any comments, corrections, revisions? Okay, roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Lee?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Lyon?
Yes. Motion carries. Next, I would accept a motion to approve the treasure items.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Okay, Todd.
Yeah, just a couple quick things. We're going to talk a little bit about the cash flow, which is, you know, pretty well on track and maybe a little better than we were looking. I'll note on the appropriations, we've got a couple significant increases due to grants. Diane already mentioned the broadband connectivity grant. That's $150,000. Mm-hmm. We've also talked about the literacy grant that you'll see the increase there. That's $208,000. There should be another increase later in the year for that same grant as we get an additional allocation this year, and then we'll be receiving $200,000 each of the next 3 years. So it's a four-year grant total.
Okay.
I also wanted to highlight that the amounts and rates from the county auditor on there, where we're basically approving an estimate of what the valuation in our district, along with our tax rates, what that would provide in tax revenues.
Okay. Notice a few donations on there too. Thank you, Walmart, for some supplies. With that literacy grant, I can't remember. Was that for certain grades or is that specific?
Six through 12.
Okay. That's pretty significant funding there, isn't it?
It's for reading, it's for books.
It's literacy based, so it's instructional strategies, some PD, MTSS, school psych support, materials.
A variety of things.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Any other questions or comments for Todd?
No. Well, just on the schedule of rates, is there a significant change in that from last year, or is that? I know there was reevaluations, and there are a lot of factors that go into it, and I know as a basis, the voters gave permission to borrow this money to build the buildings that we have in our district and authorized the collection of taxes to meet that obligation.
One factual change, because those are only estimates, so one factual change would be our bond millage, and I think I discussed that maybe a couple months ago, where our improving interest rates, saving money on what we're actually have to pay in debt, as well as our increases in valuation. So our tax rates have been rolled back. So I think that was about $500,000 that our bond rates decreased. So that's different
yes.
on the amounts and rates.
Mm-hmm.
Now that equated to a difference of, I'm going to say, I think it was about $400,000. There was other differences as well, but those are estimates. And I would say that what we actually received varies significantly each year compared to those estimates.
Okay.
So I rely more on the five-year forecast projections than those estimates.
Okay. Thank you.
Because really, I had asked about that too, and really, it, like, just making sure that millage is correct, which it is. The only change in the millage was that second bond retirement fund one in there.
Can I actually get more detailed information from the county auditor, you know, where we're getting the actual, you know, because that we're just approving the voted millage there. I actually get the effective rates and more detailed valuation and all that kind of stuff that all gets plugged into the forecast.
Because I know taxpayers pay less than the voted millage as time has gone on. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can we have a roll call, please?
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next, I would accept a motion to approve the superintendent item. Oh, sorry, I missed something. Let's back up. Board of Education item. We need to approve our delegate appointment to the annual business meeting. So, I would accept a motion to approve someone as the delegate.
I would like to nominate Mann Savage as our delegate. I know she's done a masterful job representing our district and articulating our position on all the OSBA issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I don't mind doing it at all.
I will second that motion then.
Okay.
And you are available on October 22nd and the 29th?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Any other comments? We have a motion and a second. Okay,
it's
roll.
It's a little bit interesting doing it.
Yeah.
That new style.
I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, then roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Motion carries, and Mann is our delegate. Now, I would accept a motion to approve an alternate.
I will. Say Dick Smith.
You would make a motion that Dick Smith would be the alternate?
Yes.
I'll second.
Second by Nan Savage. Any comments, questions? Are you available on those dates?
I'm willing to be the alternate knowing
that she will
will not let me down.
Okay. Okay. Any other comments or questions? Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And I will just ask both of you to remain after the meeting to sign the forms, because we have to have forms signed and they have to get turned in before our next meeting. Okay, now we are up to a motion to approve our superintendent items.
So moved.
Motion by Mrs. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Savage. Diane.
There's really
not too much, is there? I know.
Month, but I would be remiss if I did not point out that Billy will be leaving us.
I know.
Makes my heart so sad. Billy is an incredible member of the staff. And,
yes.
A champion for kids and really focused on everything that's right about the world. So we will miss him dearly, wish him all the best. It makes a whole lot of sense for his family, mm-hmm. not any sense for Marysville, which makes me sad, but
mm-hmm.
we do wish him well and he will be missed.
Mm-hmm. And I know he's doing a fabulous job training his replacement tonight, who I met, and I know we're going to be just as thrilled with his replacement. I know, but yeah, Billy has been, he's been invaluable since March, and even, I mean, way before that, but we've had a lot more connection with him just with all of our virtual meetings and things like that, and so he's just been a joy to work with. So we do wish him the best. And hope that someday he wants to come back to Marysville, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Yes, there really. I noticed there's a variety of student teachers on there again, and just kind of pointing out how it's always nice to have student teachers, but this year especially, I think it's been it's really been a win-win. You know, what a great opportunity to be here in Marysville, and you know, be a part of our personalized learning platform and.
No matter what it's like to be flexible. I mean, there are a lot of learning lessons for us all.
Yep, definitely. Okay. Any other questions or comments of Diane?
I would just like to compliment Billy for the work that he's done and to wish him well. He is a wonderful individual, and the type of person that you would like to call a friend, and he will be missed.
Okay.
Agree.
Then roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Now we are to the comments and questions from board members. I will start with you, Mr. Luke.
I just have a couple of things.
Sure.
With everything that's going on, you know, I think it's more important than ever that we have good communication between us and the community. Mm-hmm. That's always important to us, but now as much as ever. And we did talk last month about maybe trying to do virtual community coffee, so we'll
yes.
keep figuring out how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I wanted to raise as a discussion point is possibly going into the buildings. Now, we've held back on that mm-hmm. because of, you know, trying to keep people from going into the buildings. But I just wanted to raise it as a possibility that, you know, as we know more and more about how to do these kinds of things safely, I feel like I would learn something about how things are going mm-hmm. by doing a building visit at some point where it makes sense. So that's something I just wanted to bring up as a discussion point in the next few weeks.
Okay.
The other thing I had was just some general remarks about the COVID situation. We're getting a lot of input from parents and others. We had a fair amount of discussion of it and a lot of attention placed on it. And I just wanted to take a second to look at the big picture. The big picture is we have had 367 cases of COVID in Union County. We've had 2 deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a lot of things we don't know, and there's some things that we do. And what it looks like is the death rate from this virus is between 0.5% and 1%, which lines up with 2 deaths out of 400 some cases. If everybody in Union County got infected, that would be about 400 deaths. So that's what we're really talking about here. We're talking about a window. We're talking about a clock that's ticking, a clock of when the vaccines are going to be available, when the therapies are going to be available, okay? And some of those clocks, we don't know how fast they're ticking. But what we do now as a community, while we're hoping and waiting and working on getting these therapies and vaccines, is going to determine whether we have 2 deaths in Union County or 400. So everybody here is fully committed to the education of our students, regardless of what mode we're using. But we also have responsibility to the community to do our part in trying to slow down transmission so those deaths are as low as possible until we can emerge on the other side of this. One of the things we do know is that virus is transmitted 2 places, primarily at home and in places where people gather inside. So that immediately puts the schools right in the middle of this picture, because what you do in a school, you put people together in a room. And so we have to balance our commitment to educate with our commitment to being responsible members mm-hmm. of the community. And that's what we're trying to do with the hybrid model, with talking to the health officials, keeping in constant communication, and paying attention to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's still possible that we'll learn something in the next few weeks or the next few months that will help us get back together. I don't want to ignore the possibility that some new knowledge will come mm-hmm. out that will allow us to get the kids back in the classroom safely. I'll give you mm-hmm. one example. We still don't really know if little kids transmitted as much to adults as older kids do. We do know that teenagers and adults and pass it back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
There's some speculation that little kids may not pass it to adults as much.
Mm-hmm.
If that gets nailed down, mm-hmm. we may have an opportunity to bring little kids back, like talking like K-4, in a freer way and feel comfortable and safe.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to try to keep the big picture in mind that we're trying to balance educating the kids and also taking into account how hard this is on the parents, mm-hmm. with playing our part in keeping the number of deaths in the community down until we are able to emerge. And I've had to make a mental adjustment myself. I've had to realize this is not going to be like other school years.
Right.
And I'm not just talking about September.
Mm-hmm.
I thought when this started in March and April, that September, October, you know, we're going to be, I'm starting to adjust to that. It's probably not going to be a normal school year, maybe all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at least we know what we're up against and some of the things that we can do to continue educating our students while protecting each other.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Man. I want to compliment our teachers and admin mm-hmm. as a group because we've kind of gone from 0 to 60 in 4 weeks. So, seriously, 4 weeks ago, we'd never done this before. And now, you know, there are a few bumps along the road, of course, okay? But by and large, our teachers have risen to the level that's required that allows the students to get educated and become connected with their teachers. So I'd like to say thank you for that. Second issue is on Governor DeWine's press conference. We're back to orange. So we were yellow for a good week, and now we're back to orange again. But he presented a very interesting map today that kind of outlined where the red districts are and overlaid it over the school districts that are going back 5 days a week versus hybrid versus all online. And many of the new spike areas are in districts where everybody went back to school 5 days a week. So they're rural areas that really shouldn't be seeing a spike because of its lower population, but that's kind of an interesting correlation that we kind of should take note of. Also, I know that there will be quite a bit of discussion about Jonathan Alter's announcement to go back to school. But just to put things in perspective a little bit, we've got 5,100 plus students here in Marysville. Triad, who lives next door, there's only 839 students in their district. It's a very, very small school district. And Jonathan Alter has 2,237. So we're talking about half the size of our district. And so we really need to compare apples to apples a little bit and not compare ourselves to what a small district could possibly do. So, and then in regards to the community coffee, I wanted to have some discussion with maybe Diane about doing a virtual community coffee, like a Zoom session on a Saturday morning. I'm not sure who I'd reach out to kind of help with that, and you know, if we want to post the link on the school website, that might be something that we would want to consider in the upcoming months.
Mm-hmm. I'll help you get that.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. Mr. Smith?
I've got a list here. One of the things I saw, we're going to have a reverse homecoming parade, which I think is a fantastic, very innovative, very creative way of approaching things. The football team is seniors only, are going to be outside of
Mad Dogs, yeah.
And the cheerleaders are going to be out in front of Fiesta Grande, and the band's going to be down near the park across from City Hall, and they're asking people in the community to get in their cars, decorate their cars, and drive down and congratulate the seniors. So our students will be able to socially distance mm-hmm. and maintain a degree of safety, and the family and community members driving through will be able to help celebrate this event, and I think that's a perfect solution to a real mm-hmm. tradition that we have. I have really enjoyed, as I've looked on Facebook and Twitter and so forth, pictures of the activities and the creativity their teachers have in the classroom in terms of how they're organizing their classes and maintaining social distance, and even the kindergarten kids with all their masks. And so I enjoy that. Had an opportunity to go to the first football game, and I thought, I know the numbers of parents was not what we had hoped for whatever reasons, but I want to compliment the behavior of the people that attended the game. We had an OHSAA observer, and I don't know if they found fault with anything that evening or not, but I know from my observation, it appeared that most people were doing the things that we were asking them to do, and that is to socially distance and wear a mask. You know, we had a great victory, so it was fantastic. And the video, watched two games at home through online streaming. The quality of our video was fantastic, absolutely. Yeah. I have no idea who was responsible for all that stuff, but it was, in comparison to our away game, it was night and day.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like a professional presentation.
Union County Network and Wild Bill.
I've had people comment that they have no problem not being able to come to the game and be able to watch it on TV.
With their snacks.
Because it was so good.
Right.
Yeah.
In years in the future, we'll have to offer a subscription. We'll develop the Monarch Network or whatever, and we'll get it done. All the discussions and everything, Brian, every single thing you said, as we move forward, from my perspective, I think all options are on the table. You know, we have the opportunity to try and do the best job that we can in this, to educate kids in to the fullest of their ability in the safest way possible. I had a conversation with my next-door neighbor who's a teacher in a Dublin school district, has three children in our school district, and she is overwhelmed. I asked her how her year was going, and she said she was just getting buried. And we talked about what Dublin had done, what Marysville had done, and she... Her comment was, Marysville is the gold standard in terms of organization from the teaching perspective, because teachers are not being asked to do a multitude of different things. She has half of her students in the morning, she has the other half of her students in the afternoon, and she also has to do all of the online for any of the students that she was assigned that chose an online method, and she is just beside herself. And we have, a long time ago, head coach said, don't ask kids to do things that they can't do. And I've applied that in a lot of situations. And when we were looking at our plans, you know, I know parents are focused on their kids, and by right they should. And that's where their focus needs to be. And so every problem for their child is a mountain. And it needs to be addressed, and we will do what we can. But as a school board, we also have to consider our administration and our teachers and all the other staff that we have. And you can't ask them to do things which they can't do. And it's just remarkable to me, really, two things. One, we came up with a plan that really kind of divided the responsibilities and limited in some ways what we're asking the teachers to do. Obviously, we're asking everybody to do more. There's no question about that. But we tried to, it seemed like to me, we tried to limit all the extra stuff as best we could. And we're also trying to make sure that we give the support, we give the tools to the people that are employed by this school district so they can, in fact, actually do their job. I know that historically, it has been said that Marysville chooses its own path, that Marysville is not like any other community, and our school district is not necessarily like any other school district. And I think for me, making the right decision for the students that go to our school is not dependent on what Jonathan Alder or Triad and North Union of Fairbanks does, because their circumstances, the factors that they have to deal with, are entirely different than the ones we have to deal with. And we have to do what we think is right for Marysville. And I appreciate all the comments and the questions. I understand all the frustration. And I want people to know that we are hearing all of their frustrations. The school district is going to do everything it can, but there are limits as to what the school district can do. And as I've said on other occasions, it's going to be up to the community to try to help solve some of the issues that are really outside of our ability and outside of what we can do. And so I look forward to working at the challenges and trying to do the best we can do as we move forward.
Thank you.
Long-winded, sorry.
Mrs. Powers.
No,
just thanks, everybody. I haven't really heard any negatives personally myself about the hybrid method. I know that we're getting feedback on it and everything, but I haven't had any real negative comments about it. And Billy, we will miss you. Thank you for all you've done for us, and good luck. That's it.
Okay. Todd.
Nothing to add?
I don't think I have anything to add either.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to add, when you brought up that reverse parade, mm-hmm. I don't know if you shared the date or the time, September 30th, from 6 to 6:30, and it's like the T at Main Street and 5th. So Main Street from 4th to 6th, and 5th Street from Court to Plum. So for that half hour, get your cars decorated, go out there and honk your horns. And the homecoming game is on October 2nd.
Right.
I can't say enough about our staff, our administration, the leadership, continued leadership, staying on top of trends, on data, information, continuing to have those meetings. I mean, that's so important right now. And I also want to recognize how difficult this is for families and for our staff who have kids too. So just that reminder, I really hope that people will continue to be respectful, to try and be supportive. And, we want to hear the questions, the concerns, the comments, suggestions too. You know, maybe somebody out there has an idea that nobody has thought of, even in the chamber meeting today. You know, I spoke to somebody who has some empty classroom space during the day. Just like, I could maybe have 50 kids here during their remote days. And, I just trying to find some solutions, some ways to help our families get through this until we can feel like we can be safe and bring everybody back. So anyways, just encouraging people, continue to reach out, but please let's be respectful. And then I wanted to call out the building notes. We haven't really had building notes consistently for a while, so it was nice, really nice this month to see those building notes. And after I read through them all, I said, there's this theme of thankfulness in those building notes. People were thankful for our teachers and staff. They were thankful for the PTOs that have really gone over and above to help support the teachers that maybe have had to spend extra money. Definitely thankfulness for our tech department, Billy, that's you and everyone else. Thankful for our SROs, our sheriff, our community partners, all the professional development opportunities and support that they're getting from admin. Called out the building relationships and just how well everybody is following the safety protocols. And finally, they really were just talking about the importance of communication. So I know as a board, we get a lot of the update emails, but we don't get the emails that are going out from the principals, you know, like at that building level. And, you know, in conversations with Diane, I know they're having regular communications with their parents, and that in a conversation with Brian, I just remember Brian saying communication is just so key right now. So, you know, we want to be transparent. We want to make sure our community knows what's happening and that we want to hear from them too. So that's all I had to say. And I know, again, the reminder for the delegates to stay after the meeting to sign the forms. And we have an executive session on the agenda. Once we come out of the executive session, there's not going to be any action taken. So essentially our meeting will be done once we go into executive session. So with that, I would accept a motion to move into executive session for ORC 121-22G number 2, which is to consider the purchase or sale of property for public purposes that premature disclosure of information would give an unfair competitive advantage.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Sorry. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr.